I have my friend Kathy with me today. Hi, Kathy. How are you?
Hi, Anne. I'm wonderful. Great to be here again.
Yes, it's great to be back, isn't it?
Absolutely. I wanted to say a couple things before we got started, though.
Sure.
First of all, I am really excited about learning again about anatomy. As you know, I have a nursing background, but it's been 25 years, and I honestly, it's kind of that concept, if you don't use it, you lose it, and I didn't, you know, I wasn't a nurse a lot, just kind of off and on, so I know that I have forgotten a lot of the very basics. I'm really excited about today's class, and I also wanted to say that I was on your website and going through the homework, and there was just a wealth of information there, and I wanted to thank you for that. And encourage everyone, if you haven't had a chance, you know, to please do the homework. I honestly haven't finished all of it yet, but I will.
I will. It was too much.
No.
That's the beauty of the internet. I mean, at least it's there, and you can always go back to it.
Well,
I was going to ask you if you had your homework done, so that's a good thing.
I'll just confess right now, I am in the midst of it. I'm in the midst of reading that wonderful article on anxiety, and it's one that I just can't wait to have some really alone, quiet time to finish that, because it immediately caught my attention. And
that's
then the article on light and darkness, wanted to touch about that one. That's so powerful. I mean, something so simple as far as importance of having total darkness at night when we sleep and when we should go to bed. And I know that when I have a deadline, I'm always tempted, and I actually do it. But, you know, I'll stay up late and I'll drink my Diet Coke or coffee or whatever it takes to stay awake and to just to meet a deadline, and then I'm miserable.
Absolutely.
Usually.
Okay,
a day or so later.
Yeah, I stayed up too late last night, and I'm feeling it all day today, so I have to practice what I preach, too. But it's so amazing how God created our bodies and how His world is designed to give us health. If we don't try to go around it and get away from the consequences of not following His plan. I was going to ask you, on the light, I'm going to talk more about that in session 8. That'll be our last session, but I think you'll really enjoy that one. It's just going to be a hodgepodge of topics that we couldn't fit anywhere else, but I think you'll
that's
like
good.
That one.
Yeah, good,
did you have
a
chance? Oh, sorry.
No, I just want to say I know that, like, my daughter who's in college, she never gets to bed before midnight, and I know there's got to be listeners who work night jobs, and so, I mean, it can be like, what do we do? So I'm glad to hear that you're going to touch on it again in a later session because we just need a little bit more.
We certainly will. And there are things that you can do in those situations that can mimic how nature does it. So we certainly will talk about that again. Did you have a chance to keep track of any of the food that you ate this week?
Yes, I have been reflecting on what I've eaten this week, and I'm not real proud of the list.
That's okay. You know, it keeps us honest, doesn't it? to have to really think about it.
I was on the road some this week, and so that made a kind of a difference on how I ate. I know there's no excuse. Okay.
Just a hindrance, right? Okay. I wanted to ask you, Kathy, not to put you on the spot one more time, but do you remember what the two food laws that we talked about last week? Do you remember what they were?
The two food laws to eat green plants.
Very good. Very good.
And keeping our blood clean.
Very good. Very good. We're going to talk a lot about number two today, keeping our blood clean. And next week we're going to go back into practical things on how to eat more green plants. It's way more practical than it sounds, and it's more than just a salad, which is nice. Okay, today we are going to start taking a trip through the human body. Kathy, we are all unique. Your body shape is not the same as mine, which is not the same as my husband's. In fact, he's a man and I'm a woman. Our kids are different from us. Around the world, we have so many different kinds of people. So I'm going to go ahead and tell you today that the chemistry inside of our bodies is all the same, but we're all different people. So have you ever wondered, Kathy, why aren't there different diets for different people, and how in the world do you ever sort through all that and figure out which one you're supposed to follow?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have tried many, many, many diets, and it doesn't make sense why some people lose really well and I can't. Mm. And I remember even last year when I was really sick, and I was hardly eating anything for days. I mean, it was almost 2 weeks before I was back out of the hospital and such, and I hardly lost anything. I'm like, what? Mm. How can
nothing
that
more frustrating.
That didn't make any sense to me at all. So.
Well, we are all unique, but the amazing thing is that our stomachs are all relatively similar and amazingly similar. So we're going to talk about the similarities today, and later in another session, we'll talk about what to do about the differences. First of all, Kathy, I'd like you to pick a food. What food would you like to take on our trip with us today through the human body? Any food you can think of.
Oh, let's see here. Well, we were just at a jazz competition, and we went to a pizza buffet. So how about pizza?
Oh, pizza. Very good. All right, pizza. Well, let's just make it cheese pizza to make it simple. And, okay, so you're taking a bite of cheese pizza. Now, what's the first thing you do when you take a bite? You start to chew, okay? Now, the reason you chew is amazing. It's so important to our digestion. When your food touches your mouth, pizza has carbohydrates and starches. You've got some protein and fat in the cheese. You've got some vegetables in your tomato sauce. All of those things are going to mix around with the saliva in your mouth. It's going to turn into this big soup. Hopefully, you're going to chew it for longer time and not gulp it down so you can get back to the competition. But first of all, the digestive enzymes that are in your saliva will start to break down the carbohydrates, and we'll talk more about carbohydrates in another week, but those are going to start being digested the very first thing. But chewing, let's talk about chewing. I just mentioned something called an enzyme. An enzyme is a catalyst that starts to digest your food. They're very important, but if they can't get to the food, they can't work on it. So their first job is to start breaking it into pieces, and if you don't chew your food, you've got a huge hunk of pizza that's going down your throat and very little surface area for the enzymes to touch. So it's important to chew your food so that there are more surface areas for the enzymes to touch so that it can be digested. Now, there was a man over 100 years ago, before the advent of modern medicine, no emergency rooms that he could go to, and he had a deadly disease that kept him from making any digestive enzymes, and he knew that that was a death sentence. So what he decided to do is, first of all, he ate food that had lots of enzymes already in it. I'm sorry, but your pizza probably doesn't have too many, doesn't have any at all because it's being cooked. But secondly, he chewed his food until it turned into actual soup in his mouth. I mean, something like 80 times he would chew before every bite before he swallowed, and he stayed alive into old age. And no medication, nothing else, just that one change. So there's a simple change that we can all do this week, is to chew our food thoroughly. I wanted to also mention that as families, I know we have a busy family. You have a busy family, Kathy. It's hard to take the time to sit down and to have a meal with our family and to enjoy the food that God has provided for us. And last week we did talk about how God designed our food to be an enjoyment for us. And that's a good thing, to give thanks for our food, to slow down, to enjoy it, to chew it. All of those things will begin to promote health. All right. Now, you swallowed it, and it's going down into your stomach. How many stomachs do you have, Kathy?
Well, I believe I have one.
One stomach. Very good. Do you know how many stomachs a cow has? Off the top of your head.
Well, no, for some reason, I'm going to guess. It's more than one. Two to four. Are you okay? Or eight?
Well,
I don't know.
I'm no farmer. I don't have a cow myself, but according to the internet, which you can look it up, it has four stomachs. One of the reasons that a cow has four stomachs is because when Mrs. Cow is eating her grass, and that grass is chewed up, you know cows like to chew, and then it goes down into her first stomach. Grass has never been cooked in an oven. No enzymes have been destroyed. It's just a really good green plant, and it's down in her first stomach, and it just sits there, turns around a little bit, and as it's doing that, all of the enzymes from her chewing and from the grass itself that are inside the plant start to mix and work on her food, and then she burps it back up, chews it some more, and sends it to the second stomach, and it continues through all of her four stomachs continuing to let the enzymes mix. And so by the time it reaches the fourth stomach, her food is almost completely digested.
Wow.
Now, we have one stomach, but let me talk about my dog for a second. I have a black lab, and she loves pizza, so she'd like your food today. If we have any pizza around, she's begging. We're trying to get her not to. And if you happen to drop a piece on the floor, she will scarf it down. She doesn't even bother to chew. It's gone. It's down in her stomach.
Uh-oh.
And a dog, their digestive system, a cow, it could take up to 12 hours for her bite of grass to be digested. A dog, it can take 4 hours. So you see the difference, how they don't chew it well, there aren't as many enzymes, and God would call a dog an unclean food because they just don't digest their food well. So if we ate their meat, we would get undigested food in our meat. So now, back to us. We have one stomach. There was a researcher, and his name, I have him in our homework assignment, and here he is. His name is Henry Beeler, and he's written a book. It's called Food is Your Best Medicine. He was a doctor and a researcher, and he talks about how we have, basically, we have one stomach, but it has two compartments. So we're more like that cow than we are the dog. And the first part of your stomach is at the top, and when your food arrives in that part of your stomach, it just sits there for about a half an hour. And if there are any enzymes in your food already, maybe because you ate something that was fresh and from not been heated and it was a raw food and it has all of its enzymes in it, it's going to sit there at the top of your stomach and it's going to start to digest your food without any effort at all on your part. And then only after that has sat there for a while and worked will it move down slowly to the bottom part of your stomach and start to mix with the different acids that are there that help break up the different fibers and proteins and fats that are in your food. So your bite of pizza, it doesn't have any enzymes, so it's not going to have anything to work with it except for the little bit that was in your saliva. So it's just going to sit there like a lump in the top of your stomach. You ever felt that feeling when you eat?
Yeah, that might explain that.
Yeah, and that really is why. So one question you should always ask yourself before you take a bite is, what can I do to help the digestive process along so that my body has less work to do? I should point out that along next to your stomach, you have a pancreas and your liver, and you have some other glands that are just ready for action. They secrete various hormones and various enzymes themselves so that they can help you digest your food. Now, if you only ever ate food that was devoid of enzymes and had very little nutrition, then those glands alongside your stomach will have to do a lot more work. And that adds up to fatigue and stress. And we don't even notice that as a form of stress, but it really is. Okay. Now,
can I ask a question?
Yes, you sure can.
So what could I have eaten with my pizza to have helped it along?
Oh, okay, I'm going to make you wait. I'm going to make you come back next week.
Okay.
Next week we're going to certainly talk about that a whole bunch of time. So, that's mean of me. But basically, the quick answer is enzymes are destroyed over 118 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay.
So you'd have to eat something that had never been cooked above that temperature. So I'll leave your imagination to think about it. Even if it were a salad bar, you know that you'll have some enzymes probably over there. But, okay, now, after your food has gone through your stomach, it's been well mixed, well churned, starting to be digested, hopefully, it's going to end up in the small intestine. Now, the food is on the table for your body. It's ready for your body to absorb. The purpose of the small intestine is to take the food that you've eaten, that pizza, and send it through your bloodstream into all the cells of your body. So it's the construction zone. It's where food is built up into muscle and into glands and into brain tissue, and it's into lungs. It's everything that your body needs. Past the small intestine, we have the large intestine. The purpose of the large intestine is to take apart things and to send them out to the garbage. So you've got the construction zone and the deconstruction zone.
Cool.
Okay. Now, the small intestine is basically like a gigantic carpet. In fact, the average human, it's 26 feet long. It's huge. It curls around in your body. I would never imagine it was that big.
Mm-hmm.
And on that 26 feet of carpet are tiny little hairs, just like a shag rug has little hairs that stick up.
Uh-huh.
Those hairs can absorb the molecules in your food. And molecules are very tiny. I cannot wrap my mind around them, so I'm going to try to help you understand this. But a molecule is very tiny. Your body does not recognize a big chunk of pizza. It doesn't speak that language. It can recognize a hydrogen atom or an oxygen atom, all those things you remember from high school, but it doesn't recognize pizza atoms. So what the small intestine does, well, the enzymes have broken them down into their tiniest bits, and the small intestine continues to do that process, spreading this goop of food across this carpet, and these little finger-like shag rug things called villi are sticking up, and they take the cells and the molecules, and they transfer them to your bloodstream. Now, do you remember last week that one of the food laws was keep your blood clean?
Mm-hmm.
All right, this is where yucky toxins start to get into our blood, is right here at the small intestine. It's all spread out, and the small intestine absorbs all of that down deep into your bloodstream, and then it is sent from there throughout your entire body. So it is extremely important.
Right.
Yes, yes.
So why? Okay, the large intestine, I understood, gets rid of the toxins, or
mm-hmm.
kind of the garbage. So why would it take it right to the blood? Why wouldn't it dump it into the large intestine?
Okay, let's say that you needed, I'm going to simplify this as much as I can, let's say you needed some vitamin C, and your small intestine recognizes a molecule that makes up vitamin C. It will absorb it on that carpet, absorb it into your bloodstream, and send it to the cell that needs the vitamin C. Now, let's say when it gets to that cell has some garbage that needs to be taken out, and then it will be sent back through the bloodstream to the large intestine where it will be sent out of your body. Does that make sense? Did I answer
sure.
your question?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, if your body has a buildup of poisons, let's say your 26 feet of carpet is full of poison, and your small intestine starts to get overworked. Your liver is a line of defense to keep the toxins out of your blood, because at all costs, the blood needs to stay clean. So the liver is notified, and it goes whoop, 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 and it sends out emergency, emergency. It needs to neutralize all those toxins and get them out of your body. It does that by creating bile. And now an amazing thing is that we have to have sodium, which is salt, good old salt, in order for your body to make that bile. And how many people have said, I have to go on a low-sodium diet because of heart disease? And yet when they do that, they're restricting one of the very nutrients that we need in order to get toxins out of our body and prevent a heart attack.
Wow.
So be cautious when you hear advice in popular sources that it makes sense physically, that, you know, it has to have that sodium molecule in order to get the toxins out, to bind to it. So that's just one thing. We'll talk some more about those another time. But anyway, we've got some bile. The liver's working hard to get that into the small intestine and get those toxins out. What happens when there are so many toxins that the bile itself starts to get polluted and filled up, and it's just getting overwhelmed? What happens then? Well, it backs up into the gallbladder, starts to kill liver cells. It starts to clog. It's called a fatty clogged liver that cannot clean your blood the way that it should. It's a very dangerous situation. So God is so good. We have a third line of defense. He's not going to let our blood get dirty, not very easily. Our endocrine glands, those are the glands that you hear a lot about when women say, oh, my hormones are messed up. These
uh-huh.
are your thyroid glands, your pituitary, your adrenal glands. Those glands have an entire array of hormones that are designed to back up and help get the toxins out of your blood. Now, they also can become overworked. And this is where they estimate 95% of all disease starts, is when the liver has been overwhelmed, and then these endocrine glands have been overwhelmed, and then the body says, I just got so much garbage, there's no room to put it, I'm just going to have to dump it somewhere else. And so some of the places it dumps it would be in the skin. You'd see it as acne, in the lungs, It would dump it in the ovaries, and you see infertility. It just anywhere. You name it, wherever it lands, basically, wherever it's in the blood, it's going through and it's poisoning your body. So
does it have anything to do with gallbladders? You know, I mean, I've
absolutely
had my gallbladder out, and so is that
so? It's more difficult now for you without a gallbladder. Yes, absolutely,
yeah.
Because you don't have near as efficient way to get rid of the toxins. So, yes, we are going to discuss problems like the gallbladder in week 7. We're going to say, what do I do when I've had this surgery and I can't go back and put it in?
Sure.
So we will go back to that.
Okay.
So I said that the small intestine is your first line of defense, and then your liver is your second line of defense. Your endocrine glands are your third line of defense. Just to review, let's just say you've got undigested food sitting in your stomach, no enzymes, no help to digest it. Your own body's been doing it for 40 years, and it's tired, so it doesn't make the amount of enzymes that it should to come and help you out. So this food comes in, it sits in your intestines, it starts to rot, poisons are spread across that carpet, damages the lining even of your small intestine so that you aren't able to absorb as many nutrients. You basically go into a starvation form. They enter your bloodstream and they settle anywhere that they happen to settle. We're going to talk more about that next week. But can you see why it's so important,
yeah,
Kathy, to get the toxins
absolutely
out?
Absolutely.
All right. Then on your handout, it says that the normal way to get rid of toxins, to eliminate them, is through the liver. And secondly, and that sends them to the bowel, or the large intestine, and also through the kidneys, and they send it to the bladder. Problem elimination is when the liver and the kidneys are so full of toxins that they cannot do their job. Again, it accounts for 95% of all disease. Now, how does this fit? Thinking into last week, how does this fit with God's food law to keep our blood clean? What do you think?
Absolutely. I'm sorry. How does it fit with keeping our blood
clean? Well, I guess
blood?
I kind of answered my question.
It's extremely important. I mean, obviously extremely important.
Extremely, yeah.
Those toxins. And obviously, that has to do with the unclean, when we eat unclean animals or anything that has that unclean blood in it, then we're just introducing that into our bodies on top of all the other things that we're eating and causing our body to have to work even harder. And if, like you said, if it has nowhere to go, it's going to dump it somewhere we don't want it to dump.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Leviticus, In Leviticus 17:11, it says the life of the flesh is in the blood. And we don't realize if we have dirty blood, we will get a disease. It just depends on which one we get as to where it has settled. So the opposite of that is also true. If we have clean blood, we will be healthy. So this is very fundamental to everything else that we're going to talk about. And if it seems really easy, it's just hard to do. Basically, if our food has been properly prepared, it's easy to digest, it has lots of nutrients, and the nutrients are prepared in a way that our body can recognize them easily. Maybe not so much of the pizza. Well, pizza can be good. We'll talk about that more later. But anyway, if you are interested in learning more about this, you can visit our homework page on our website for this class, and there's an article called The Long Hollow Tube. It's by Sally Fallon, one of my favorite authors, and she goes into great detail, much more than I have, about how amazing your digestive system is. Now, if you have not eaten properly prepared food, you have the beginnings of disease. On page 2 of our handout, it says, what is disease? My kids have been studying last year, more than this year, a little bit about Louis Pasteur and the germ theory. And it's important for us to know a little bit about him because he was the one that basically identified this is what a germ is. And we know that germs, we need to wash our hands and we need to stay away from germs and not be exposed to them. But other people have been doing research on his work, and they have been finding out that it's not just germs that cause disease. If you happen to touch someone that had a cold and put that cold germ to your mouth and that germ gets into your body, it doesn't necessarily mean that you will get a cold. And I think we all recognize that because we know of people that are exposed to colds all the time and never seem to get sick, and other people go to great lengths, Lysol and everything they can think of to avoid germs, and they get sick constantly. So what is the difference? I have a quote on your handout by John Shaw Billings. He was a doctor in the late 1800s, and he says it is important to remember that the mere introduction of germs into a living organism does not ensure that they will multiply. Just because a germ is in your body doesn't mean that it can take over and run the show. In fact, the condition of the organism itself has much influence on the result. A healthy body, healthy bloodstream can prevent disease, even if you are exposed to germs. Now, the Bible does talk about being clean, but the biggest way that we can be clean is to keep our blood clean by eating good food. Disease is nothing but an attempt on the body to try to get rid of the junk that's inside. And one of the ways it does that is by, let's say, acne, for instance. It's just sending toxins out to the skin. And we look at it and we say, oh, stop, we've got to keep that from coming out. And so we go to great lengths. And so the body says, okay, I can't get rid of the toxin that way. How about I try, let's try the ovaries. And then maybe we'll have an extremely heavy period that month. And we go, oh, that's terrible. Let's take some hormones so that we don't have that happen. And meanwhile, the body's just saying, please, I've got to get the disease out. So
it makes total sense. Yeah, I can just see that happening. Wow.
Since I brought up hormones, let's take a minute and let's take a hormone trip through the body. I'm going to do this very briefly. And if anyone is interested in learning more about hormones, I have a wealth of information on my website on hormones, way more than we could ever go into today. And I just encourage you to go there and read through it. And if you have any questions, you're welcome to call or to email me. But first of all, on your handout, you'll see there's a picture of a man there, and he has little numbers pointing to all the different glands that make endocrine hormones in his body. And we will just go through this very quickly. I just want you to get a real brief look at how amazing the system is. First of all, you have the pineal gland, and I had never heard of this gland before a few years ago, but it's so important. It produces melatonin, which if you did your homework about the light and darkness, and you did, Kathy, you read about melatonin and how it is so essential to all the other hormones in our body. But that is produced, as you can see, just a tiny little gland right in the middle of your brain. And then very close to it, you have the hypothalamus. And the hypothalamus regulates hormone secretion. In other words, it doesn't make the hormones itself. It tells everybody else what to do. He's kind of the boss up in the brain. And he's saying, okay, time to do this one, time to do that one. Then you have the pituitary gland, and it does begin to make hormones. It's a very important gland. If the hormones, any of them, are not working correctly in the pituitary, you will feel it with disease all the way through your body. Most importantly, it affects the adrenal gland, the thyroid, and the ovaries in women. So you can imagine how important it is. Then if you look down at number 7, you see the adrenal glands. There are two of those glands, and they actually are made up of two different parts. So it's just a very complicated little gland area. You have your fluid balance. Your blood pressure is in this one. So if anyone has a blood pressure disorder, this is where it's being controlled. All of your metabolism. So a lot of our weight problems originate here. Adrenaline. So stress affects the adrenal gland very much so. And then you have number 4. Up in the neck, you have the thyroid gland. And the thyroid also controls our metabolism in a little bit different way than the adrenal glands, because it controls our thermostat. It keeps us warm. It keeps us not too warm, not too cold. Everything has to be just the right temperature in order for the enzymes in our body to work correctly. And then, finally, down at number 10, and that's the little cutout on the handout for a woman, you have the ovaries. And they have a vast array of hormones themselves. I failed to mention number 8, and that's the pancreas. The pancreas controls blood sugar levels, and it also manufactures enzymes that break down our food. So it's incredibly important that our pancreas be healthy, because it's, affects our digestion so early in the game. Again, you can go to my website if you would like to read more about those hormones. But why do people have hormone problems? That's a question. Why do some people seem to have so many hormone problems? I myself, Calvi, have had a lot. That is what started my whole search for good health, is all the hormone problems. On page 3 of your handout, it says, why does this whole system break down? And I love these illustrations. They're by Dr. John Lee, and any of his books are good. If you ever get your hands on one, definitely read it. But first of all, he compares a hormone to a messenger, because a hormone is something that we really don't understand very well. But basically, it's just a messenger. It goes to a part of the body and says, you need to do this. And then that part of the body responds and oftentimes sends another messenger back to the brain, which says, okay, we did it. And it just kind of keeps the whole system regulated. So a hormone is a little messenger. And the cell that it's going to, that it's going to give instructions to, maybe it's going to go to the thyroid, and it's going to say, I want you to warm her body up. She's a little cold, and she's not going to make very many enzymes. So the messenger goes to the queen, and the queen lives inside that cell, and she's the one that has her hand on the thermostat. And so, first of all, one reason that the whole system can break down is because the hormones cannot get into the cell to work in the first place. There's a wall. There's a big gate in front of that castle, and that poor little messenger just can't get in. Number two, the queen might not be in the castle when the messenger gets there. The hormone gets there, and there's nobody with their hand on the thermostat. Often that's a genetic glitch, something that we're born with. This is just one of the reasons, though, and most of the time we'll blame everything on our poor ancestors and say, oh, it's all their fault. That's why I'm overweight. Number three, though, the queen is unavailable or occupied with other messages, and this happens most often in the with cortisol and progesterone and some of these hormones. But basically, each cell has receptors for multiple hormones, and they can only do one thing at a time, and when our bodies get confused, they have trouble. Number four, the message may be miscommunicated to the queen. The messenger takes it in, and the queen doesn't understand what to do. Number five, the messenger may be delayed because the messenger, in order to get there, has to have had a good lunch. And that good lunch might consist of needing enzymes or vitamins or minerals or other nutrients in order to do its job. And again, we will talk more about that one later. Number six, the message is captured by a rival queen. Maybe in our water supply or our food supply, there are poisons, pesticides, chlorine, fluoride, all of these things that can bind to that messenger, tie his hands, and say, no, you can't go. And then finally, the volume of the message has been turned up or down, and there's too much or too little of the hormone in the system. This happens frequently. And basically, the hormone's either shouting at the poor queen or she can't hear what he's saying at all. And all of these, boy, there's a lot of things that can go wrong, aren't there, Kathy?
Can we go back to number one?
Yes, absolutely.
What would cause them the hormone not being able to get through the cell? I mean, I'm assuming it must create a hard surface, or it must be,
yes,
a reason why it can't get through. But
oh, it's an incredibly amazing procedure. I saw a video one time of how a hormone goes into a cell, and it is so amazing. There must be 100 processes that happen just to get the hormone from outside the cell to the inside. It's so amazing. But anywhere along that process, something can go wrong. A lot of times it can be something so simple as there haven't been enough nutrients and the cell wall itself is damaged and it can't get in because it's poorly built. Does that make sense? That's just one. I mean, there must be hundreds of reasons why that would happen.
Okay.
But it just, you know, again, to go back and give God the glory for creating us, in that our bodies are so complex, so complex.
And number six, kind of, you know, with the fluoride and the chlorine, that's in our toothpaste.
I know.
Yeah, or fluoride.
Absolutely.
And water and, yeah. So
it's in everything, and I live in a farming community, and it's sprayed in our crops, and it's in the air. Certainly gets down into our water supply, pesticides especially, and those things have estrogen-like substances to them. So they confuse our body, and they aren't the real thing that our body would normally make, but they act like it, and they hold those messengers captive.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure you're going to come up with some answers, so I'll be patient.
Oh, sure. Now that I've overwhelmed you, let's make it worse. Let's talk about the symptoms of hormone problems.
Okay.
I don't know if there's a single woman listening today that could not find herself on this list somewhere. I heard a statistic of, it must be like 98% of the American population is struggling with a hormone problem. It's mind-boggling, but it also makes sense if you just look around at the mall and watch people going by, and you can tell that we are not a healthy population. I'm not going to go through this list and, you know, too much thoroughness, but I do want to point out that one of your homework assignments tonight is to keep track of symptoms that you personally have, and I would like to recommend that you just take a pencil and go through this list. Maybe you struggle with being cold all the time. I know it's winter, but just cannot fight that feeling of coldness. So you'd want to circle that. You want to go through this entire list and circle everything that fits you. And then I want you, through the next few weeks as we talk about how to fix these problems, I want you to keep track of your symptoms and see if any of them start to go away, because there's nothing more motivating than seeing yourself actually heal. But you won't do that if you never, you know, if you don't keep track of it, you'll go, oh, I don't know, I feel fine. But if it's in black and white right in front of you, you can be much more objective about it. So I strongly encourage you to go and do the homework this week. Next week, we're going to go into the basics of nutrition. We're going to apply God's two food laws to what we eat. I'm going to say, this is what good nutrition is. So I know you've been waiting for that. Unfortunately, we won't have time all next week to tell you how. We will have to take a few weeks to go through this whole process, but we will. Next week's going to be really fun. Before we go, I want to talk about how to monitor your health. I've touched on it very briefly already, and that you already know you're going to have to keep track of your symptoms. But first of all, what is health? Health is different for different people. To me, health means that I can get up in the morning and I can be a good mom, I can be a good wife, I can get my things done without getting too tired, I don't have cancer or heart disease. You know, what is health? It's going to be different to different people. And then, as I just mentioned, our population as a whole, our health is declining. If you go to the doctor's office and you get a whole bunch of lab work done, when the labs come back, the doctor's office usually will call you up and say, Kathy, your labs are normal. You're fine. And you might be disappointed because you might go, I don't feel fine, but I guess I am. It must all be in my head. So what is normal? Well, the way a lab works is they take all of the blood work that has come through their laboratory in the years that they've been there, and they average it all together, and normal is right average. Well, if the population, if our health is declining, then the averages change. And you're still considered normal, even though you don't feel well. So I want you to realize that normal doesn't necessarily equal good health. What is optimal? What is the best that you could be? Now, I just want, basically to me, optimal would mean that I don't have any symptom that's on page 3. If I didn't have to circle a single thing, I think I've got optimal health, don't you? That would be amazing. So first of all, always if you go and do get lab work done, always get a copy of it. Have them send it to your house and look at it in black and white and compare your scores from year to year from the times that you get your blood work drawn so that you can see for your own eyes not how you compare with the general population but how you can compare with yourself. That's one good point. But secondly, you don't have to have a doctor to monitor your health. If you're paying attention to your body at home, you can catch things very early, way before they become a big problem. So I'm going to tell you how to do that. This is really good.
Right.
Okay, first of all, this is obviously, well, not just for women, but we're just going to talk about women today, and that is fertility. This only applies, obviously, to women that haven't reached menopause, but I'm hoping that's the majority of our audience today. And if so, your fertility is a huge clue to your health, and here's why. God created our bodies to conceive and bear children. It says so in Genesis chapter 1, and if you did your homework reading assignments, again, you would have read more about that. But your fertility is a huge clue because your body will close off the ability to conceive a child if your blood is toxic. And one of the reasons, obviously, the biggest reason it does that is to protect that little growing life. And your body knows that if you are not healthy enough to have a baby, then it had better shut it off. Now, obviously, we know of many situations where people weren't that healthy and still had a baby. So that tells you how drastic your body must think your blood is if you are infertile. So fertility is so important. I don't have any way on the phone today that we can talk about all the ways to do that. So I'm, again, going to send you to my website. There are some quick guides that you can read there, and then there is a recommendation of a book. I highly recommend it if you're at the age where you can track this. Okay, secondly is body temperature. This one is something anyone can do, right, Kathy? This is so easy.
Yes.
All you have to do is go to your local pharmacy, pick up a thermometer, a basal body thermometer. I like the digital ones. I do hear that the glass ones are a little bit more accurate, but they take a little bit more time every morning. I do mine temperature so often that I can see changes very quickly, so I'm satisfied with the digital. It just costs a couple dollars. And there are two ways that you can track your body temperature. First of all, a method that was developed by Dr. Broda probably about 70, 80 years ago now to work with patients of his that had hypothyroidism. And he noticed that the thyroid controls the body temperature. So by simply having his patients check their body temperature early every morning after they had been asleep and before they got up and started to raise their body temperature by moving around or eating, when it was at its lowest after sleeping all night, he had them record it, and he noticed some amazing things. First of all, if their early morning body temperature was below 97.5, they had problems with their thyroid gland. Simple as that. So I have been able to use it. First of all, you'll use it with the fertility and noticing that, as you'll read on my website. But secondly, because one of the problems I struggle with is my thyroid gland, it tells me immediately if something I did the day before, maybe something I ate, maybe some stress in my life, maybe I got mad at someone, maybe I just didn't get to bed on time, all of those things show up immediately the next morning in my body temperature. And the reason why, again, is because my body does not want, well, let's back up for a second. The thyroid gland tells the ovaries to produce hormones to make my uterus a welcome place for a little baby. And if my thyroid gland notices that my body's not healthy enough, it turns down the temperature so that the hormones are not made so that I can't get pregnant. It's just amazing. So within 24 hours of doing something bad in my diet or wherever, it shows up in my body temperature. And this is why I think it's such a valuable tool. It immediately shows. And if I'm doing something good, it also quickly shows in my body temperature. So I really urge you to do that. There's a second method that you can use and track your temperature all day long. Maybe you don't have a thyroid problem. Maybe you still have some of the symptoms on that list circled, but your body temperature is not below 97.5, and so you say, well, it's not my thyroid. What is it? Well, on my website, there's an explanation of how to track it all day long and how to look at those results and pinpoint which gland is having trouble and what to do about it. So, again, there's more than I can do right now on the phone.
So, Anne, where is that on your website at?
Okay. If you go to anneshealthplace.com and click on today, it'll have a thing for today's class where you got the handout. On that same page, there is going to be all kinds of homework assignments. This is for class two. So if you're listening later and you're not sure where that is, you're looking for the homework assignments for class two. Just should be right on the front page. Just click on free online classes, and it'll take you to where you need to go.
That's intriguing.
Okay, it's neat. I've been using this now for 9 years, and I know it works. It's just my favorite way. It doesn't fix a problem, I suppose, but sure helps me have the motivation to fix it. I also have on the list to keep a food diary and keep track of any other symptoms that you might be having. Depending on how a person's health is would dictate how often they would want to do that. But anytime you're not feeling well and you just can't figure out why, it's a good idea. Just take a couple days, write down what you're eating, write down what your symptoms are, and you'll be amazed at the patterns that'll pop out at you, and you'll know what to do. Some people have asked me, can you check your blood pressure? Does that tell you if you have good health or not? And I want to point out that I think it's valuable to check your blood pressure, but it's a very late sign of bad health. Once your blood pressure has gone up or once your blood pressure has gone low, either one is a sign of poor health, and by that time some damage has been done, so it's really better to check it sooner than that with your body temperature, with your food diary, and checking your fertility. Okay. So for everyone listening, I want you to practice this week. I want you to go there, do the four little assignments that are there. There are helpful guides online that you can use. You can print them out. And if you have any questions, you're welcome to email me. Okay. We're going to wrap up, Kathy, with our conclusion. I want to ask you some questions, if you don't mind if I put you on the spot again.
Okay.
First of all, Kathy, I'm hearing all these things about how I've painted a pretty dire picture about our health.
Yeah, I'm a little overwhelmed, but it's okay.
I'm sure. And I want to encourage you that help is on the way. Next week, we're going to start fixing these problems. But, you know, Kathy, I think the hardest thing is a lot of times we'll read a book or we'll hear on the news or something about our health and we'll say, you know what, I'm never going to eat pizza again, never, or whatever the food is that we're going to stay with. And yet our motivation doesn't stay. What do you think, Kathy? What are some things that would motivate you to change your health?
Family.
Okay.
When I look at, you know, when I was sick a few years ago and really realized how close I was to death, definitely family came into play and not wanting to miss out. So definitely family. My love for God and what he's done for me, and I know he has a perfect plan for my life, and I don't want to mess that plan up. And I know he's had to reconstruct his plan over and over for me throughout the years. But honestly, I mean, God's word is really clear about that plan that he has for us and about our body and how it's a temple for the Holy Spirit and that we were bought with a price and we're to honor him. And I want to do that, and I don't. I mean, if those of you who know me, you know, I struggle in this area with food, and I just want to be beyond that, where I understand, you know, how important it is and that I be accountable and disciplined but to enjoy it. No, I don't want to. You know, I don't want to get caught up in all that diet stuff. I don't want that anymore.
To become obsessed by it.
No, I want it to be life, and I want it to be real, and I want it to be because it's bringing health to me. But I would say those are the two that really motivate me. And I just want to feel good. I want. There's a lot I want to do in life. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
That's what I was going to say, Kathy. You have a purpose for your life. You know why you're alive, and you want to accomplish that purpose for Jesus Christ. And when we don't have a purpose, all of our motivation for changing goes out the window. Why bother? We don't. It's just life. Maybe we'll be reincarnated someday. Or, you know, why do I exist? I'm just the result of chance and evolution, and I'm just a blob of cells. It doesn't matter. But God's word says different. He says that he has a huge purpose for our lives, and he loves us.
Absolutely.
And so that gives us so much motivation to change and to learn and to discover. Kathy, when something, I shouldn't put you on the spot like this. I'll give you a clue. The answer is on your handout on page 4. But when something's out of normal range, what does this mean? Can you kind of put it into words? Something's not normal in my body. What does this mean? If I have a symptom.
I'm sorry. I'm not quite understanding the question.
Yeah, I know. That's not a good question.
It's a great question. I just want mine didn't wrap around.
Let's say that a lab result comes back and something's out of normal range. Or let's say that I have a headache every day at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Or let's say I'm gaining weight and I never used to be.
Okay,
what does this mean?
Well, it means that something's not right in the body, that there's probably toxins that are struggling to find a way out, and so
you nailed it. Congratulations.
So they're attacking somewhere.
Yep, the blood is not clean. Something in my blood is unclean and it's spilling toxins. So digestion of food is always part of the problem, isn't it? And
absolutely.
Says what must
chewing.
Be changed.
Chewing's my problem.
Chewing.
You know, honestly, I'm serious. I eat so fast because I think I needed go on to the next thing, you know, and that has probably been a huge problem from day one, just to slow down and to chew, you know.
And maybe we could turn that around. I'm not going to say this on you, but maybe stress comes into play somewhat too, at least for me.
Sure.
You know. All right, so what must be changed if something is out of normal range, if I have these symptoms and I know something's wrong? Obviously, food is a huge part of the answer. Something has to be changed. It isn't necessarily always what I eat. Maybe the problem in digestion is somewhere in my body, but God is good, and he provides so many amazing tools to fix this. So also our character can affect our food digestion, you know, like we said last week, stress and anger and hatred and bitterness and gluttony. Sleep, water quality, medications that we're taking can affect our food digestion. There's a million things that can play into this, but we will cover them, maybe not a million, but we'll cover quite a few of them over the next 2 weeks. Food is the easiest thing to change quickly. And so that's where we're going to start, and we're going to spend the next 5 weeks talking about how to change our food. I say it's the easiest because it's the most visible. You eat 3 times a day. I mean, changing how much light comes into your bedroom is an easy thing, or chewing your food is an easy thing. But food is easy, so we're going to start there, and then we'll close our series at the very end with all of the other things, such as character and sleep and water quality and all those things. finally, just to give you some hope, for those of you that just know that your liver is absolutely filled with toxins and you don't know what to do about it and you don't want to wait till next week's class to get started on an answer, or maybe you know that your food doesn't have any enzymes because you cook everything and so you already know there's a problem, I just wanted to give a little Band-Aid to some of the listeners. You can go to my website. I'm not a big fan of supplements, but some supplements that I would recommend would be a liver cleanse or digestive enzymes that you can take in a capsule. And you can see those on my website. They're just a Band-Aid. I really want to get to the root of the issue, so we'll come back next week. So don't forget your homework. There's plenty of it. If you like to read, you'll love your homework. And if you don't like to read, you'll probably want to strangle me right now. All right. Kathy, do you have any other questions before we go?
Oh, I don't think so. I'm ready to finish my homework from last week and tackle this week. So thank you so much for everything that you provide for us.
Well, Kathy, okay, for your new homework, you just go to annshealthplace.com. You click on online health classes and go to class 2, and you'll find today's handout and several reading assignments. And these articles have more information than we could ever fit into this show, and we want to help you understand how your body works, your digestive system, your hormones, your glands. So there is a lot of homework again. Beginning in the next few weeks, you'll find more recipes and fun things, but today you get more reading. I'm also recommending that you begin monitoring your health. There are 4 methods on my website. We talked about them very briefly in our class. There are forms there that you can print. Try especially to record your body temperatures. It just takes a couple dollars to go to Walmart, grab a thermometer. Most moms have one in the house already. And you can start writing those down, writing down the foods you eat. Those are really simple places to start. If you're listening to the audio recording of this health class and you're ambitious and you want to go on and listen to class number 3, don't. I don't want you to. Be good. Do your reading. Record a day or two of your body temperatures, and then when you've done your homework, you can click on class number 3. Okay, that is all for today. Next week, we'll be learning the basics of good nutrition, and this is a pivotal class. We'll be applying the 2 food laws that are found in God's Word to the food that we prepare in our kitchens. We're going to discuss enzymes and green plants and how they make a huge difference in all our cells, because they're like keys to a lock, and they have to fit right so that we can properly digest our food and so that our metabolism can function properly. We're also going to discuss the damage that can occur if they don't fit properly. In other words, if the enzymes in our food are damaged. And we're going to learn some questions that you should ask before you take any bite of pizza or any other food, and you'll get a checklist of what a healthy lifestyle consists of. What does it look like? Kathy, thank you for joining me today.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Well, once again, this has been Ann Elliott from AnnsHealthPlace.com, and thank you so much for listening.